Blog Talk Radio.
Woo!
Johnson, this is Wardell Potts Jr., and we are hanging out with Jelly Bean today, guys. That music really took me someplace. That's the first time I heard that song, Jelly Bean. How you doing, my brother?
I'm here, good, bro.
Oh, my God. I mean, I'm blown away in the studio here. You can see, you can hear it in my voice, right?
Yes, I can.
Wardell, you are the truth.
You are the truth, my brother.
That's right, man. I keep it real, man. I got to give the props where they belong. For first of all, before I get going here, see, guys, I got to do this, Jelly Bean. Hello, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to Solar Records Radio. You see, I'm so excited. I have a very special friend, an amazing musician, and a great man on the line here that we're interviewing today by the name of Jelly Bean Johnson from The Time, and now he's doing his own thing. And so we are all so blessed to be able to have this opportunity with him, and I'm definitely blessed, but I will not take pictures with him again because he's too tall. It's embarrassing.
Come on, Wardell.
I'm keeping it real. All right. Let's bring Jelly B. What's up, man? What's happening? What's happening, my brother? How you doing?
Hey, it's good. It's good. It's the middle of the week. It's hump day. So, you know, hey.
That's
I'm
right.
Here.
Andy Dasdale, so, hey man, I'm so proud of you, man. You know, I've watched you for many, many years. You've been doing this for a long time, and it is just an honor, man, for me to. I got to be perfectly honest. It's truly an honor to be on this line with you and sharing this conversation with you. Thank you so much for, man, for.
Hey,
for
it's my pleasure, man. Like I told you, I was teasing with you a few weeks, you know, a couple weeks ago. I tell you, I was like, Wardell, you're playing on as many hits as I have. So what you talking about?
Well, you know, it's still, you know, but you know, it's that's what you did, and so I'm talking about what you did, because what you did blessed me, right? And I was just really excited about what you did, and I know, I mean, I feel blessed about what God, you know, provided for me as well. But I still have to always tell people, you know, man, that's awesome what you're doing, and I love it. Whether it's music or, you know, whatever they do, if they're good at it,
exactly.
You got to give people their props, right? Absolutely,
yep,
absolutely. So real quick before we get started and you start your story, I want to just bring my co-host in. Don Fleming is on the line. Don, Jelly B. Johnson on the line.
How you doing, man? I am a big
How you doing, Don?
I'm good, Jelly B. Good talking to you. Good, absolutely just feeling this vibe, man. I'm loving it, man. Appreciate it, Wardell. Love it.
Oh yeah, this is the brother right here. This is the man. Hey, so Bean, first of all, how did you get your name? Where did Jelly Bean come from?
Oh wow, we'll do the short version of that, bro. It was given to me when I was a teenager, man. You know, Flight Time was a band before it was ever became a big famous production company. And we was like 14, 15, 16 year old kids, and we all had this band. We had like a 10 piece band with horns and everything. Ended up our lead singer ended up being Miss Black Minnesota, Cynthia Johnson. And we were all teenagers, man. So anyway, we here in Minnesota, it was challenged for black bands to play clubs. So, but we were that good, we got lucky enough to play the one club here that would, you know, let us play. It was a bar downtown called the Flame Bar, and it was one side was country and one side was funk. And it was, you know, open 7 days a week and stuff. And so we're in there, and dude hired us. I don't think he cared if we were underage or not. He wasn't telling nobody.
So anyway,
we went in there. So we're in there one night. It's like a Tuesday night and Wednesday night, you know, the early days of the weekend. You know, ain't nobody hardly in there. So we're in there. So we're kids, basically. We're in there. We're playing. And in between breaks, you know, we was commenting on how bad we sounded and stuff and just cracking jokes with each other about it. I said, man, our trumpet player, his name is Robert Martin. He's retired now as a firefighter. And he was just teasing us. He's like, damn, man, we really ain't into it tonight. Because we knew, even at that age, it was just like Prince. We knew we were good, but, you know, we would just be messing around. So he said, man, damn, we sound really bad tonight. He said, we sound like a bunch of jelly beans. And then he looked at me, he said, Jelly Bean. and the whole band fell out, right? So anyway, I don't know how the next day he comes, man, and he had a T-shirt. I don't know how he got the money from his parents or whatever to get this T-shirt made. And it was a picture of a vulture sitting on a fence with the caption Jelly Bean underneath it. And I've been Jelly Bean ever since, bro.
Wow.
So that's a great story. Yeah. And this is the 70s. You know, this is back in the 70s.
Yes. So why don't you, do us a favor, man, for, you know, those who are new fans of yours and then us, you know, older guys that have been around, you know, and loving on your stuff for a long time. Why don't you share your story, man? Why don't you tell us how did you become who you are? Like, how did it start out for you? Did you start out as, you know, is somebody in your family a musician? How did you get started with music?
You know what? My mom moved me here from Minnesota, man, when I was 12, 13 years old to keep me out of the gangs because the gangs were recruiting me back in Chicago. We were in Chicago, man. And I want to really say my musical odyssey started in Chicago as a little shorty. you know, just listening to all the black radio stations and stuff and just developing a real love for music at like 10, 11, 12 years old.
Chicago,
you know,
blues.
Yeah, the Chicago, I still to this day, you know, I speaking of that, I was just watching some of the Blues Festival last night, and I've been blessed to play that, you know, play the blues there, you know, many times with Ronnie Baker Brooks, you know, who I produced this record from years ago. So I played that festival many times over the years, man. But anyway, you know, but yeah, my mom had the foresight, you know, to see that, you know, Chicago was not the place for me because I was going to end up dead or whatever. But that's where that love started right there, just listening to the radios until the wee hours. And I had little, you know, I guess I'm sure you guys are older, had the little tiny radio that you could put by your ear and listen, you know, with battery operated, whatever. But I would do that, and I'd fall asleep listening to black radio. Well, culture shock hit in. When we moved here to Minnesota at 13, man, there was no black radio. We had one black radio station here. And it was on from only from 1 to 5 p.m. in the afternoon. And so it was culture shock for me. So I had to adjust to that. Yeah, I had to adjust to that, you know, going from 24/7 black radio and funk and, you know, all the great, you know, Chicago, the Shy Lights and all the Tyrone Davises and all that kind of stuff and the Chicago Blues to virtually hardly no radio at all, black radio here. So that forced me to you know, listen to white radio. And that's when I got into the Black Sabbaths and Rare Earth and Black Oak Arkansas and all these prominent white bands, Grand Funk Railroad. And it changed me musically, man. So, you know, at 13, 14, and I guarantee you that's part of the thing, Reason Prince was so diverse with his musical thing, too, because he was going through the same thing, but his parents were musicians. His mom was a singer, and his dad was a prominent musician here.
Right,
so that's
right.
A Jimmy Jam, same thing, yeah. Same thing. So we were exposed to that as the teenagers, man. So
no, were you in Minnesota?
I was in Minnesota then. My mom moved here in 1968, you know, from Chicago. And I was 13, and she moved me here, and that's when my real musical odyssey with the Minnesota Minneapolis sound began at 13 years old. So.
Okay, now I know that, you know, Prince had he was going around trying to be in bands and doing different things or whatever he was doing musically. And there were other, you know, I guess Jimmy Jam and them too were doing stuff. Moore's, I mean, everybody was trying to do something. How did, were you a part of this? Did you guys run into each other?
Yeah. We ran into each other. We went to the same junior high school and everything, that stuff. That's how I found out about Prince would. I was in Lincoln Junior High, and he was right next door at John Hay Elementary, you know, 11, 12 years old. So that's, yeah, I met these guys. I met Morris and Prince when I was 11, 12 years old, bro. And they, you know, we used to
school. How old were they?
They had to be 11, 12. I had to be like 13, 14. They're both, you know, Morris, me and Morris are the same age, but Prince is like 2-3 years younger than me. But anyway, you could tell even – I never forget, man, a little side story here. We used to do a festival here, a black festival here, every year. And this started in the late 60s into the 70s. We would do this area. It was a community theater called The Way that really developed us as youngies, as little shorties. And every summer we'd have a thing out there. So anyway, we all had bands. Flight Time, we had our little band at 14, 15. And Prince had his, you know, at 12, 13. It was called Grand Central. And we would play these festivals. And I never forget seeing Prince, man. He had a little – Sears silver tone guitar, just ripping solos like Carlos Santana, bro. Just unbelievable, man. And this dude is like 12, 13 years old and short as hell, afro bigger than him, and just ripping these guitar solos. I'm like, oh my God, I was blown away, you know. And so they had their bands, so we ended up being rival bands and teenagers, man. So that's, you know, that's how it started. But yeah, we went to the same junior highs and high school. That's how we initially met. And, you know, and we spun it off a little bit over the city and stuff as we grew up. But that's where it initially started, on the north side here in Minnesota.
Wow. So, I mean, this is, you know, the sad part of this conversation for me is that I didn't give you a chance to, you know, share your feelings about the loss of Prince. You've known him as a child, but many of us didn't know him until a grown man. So, you know, if there's anything you would like to say in regards to that,
well,
you have.
It, 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 it it was heartbreaking, bro, because, you know, because that's when you think about Wardell. That's when you think about all the times you grew up as kids with Shorty playing basketball on it. I mean, I used to go play basketball with him on his driveway at his dad's house, you know, and we had it, like I said, it was 12, 13, 14 years old. So, of course, and, you know, he's the reason people know who Jelly Bean Johnson is today, Morris Day is, Jimmy Jam, all of us. He's the reason because he was the first one of us to make it, you know. He 1978, I'll never forget, 1978. I remember walking to the theater, man. I mean, this one, you know, when you're 13, 14, you know, distances don't mean nothing to you. I would walk many blocks, man. I remember walking to this famous, his first show was a movie theater here called the Capri Theater. And we used to always go there and watch the black exploitation movies there as kids. So his first concert here in the hood when he made it was there. And I remember walking to see that, man. It was crazy.
And did he have a record out or was it?
Yeah, his first record. First record, Soft and Wet. No, that's stuff. Yeah, that first record, man. This is 1978, Bordell.
1978. Wow. 78, yeah. I was in college.
Yeah, the For You album. Yeah, you're talking about the For You album.
Yeah, the For You album, the very first record. First record, you know, Soft and Wet and all that stuff. I'm Yours, all And it was crazy. Because, see, first off, you got to realize, I didn't know Prince could play all the instruments. I just knew he played the guitar. You know, I didn't know that he was.
Right.
Well, I did know about the keyboard, but I didn't know about the drums and all the bass and all that other stuff because when I saw him, he was playing either a guitar or a bass. You know, so I didn't know. Right. So it was even more impressive to me when I found out. You know, because I heard Jimmy Jam talk about this one time. Is that you heard his record and you thought, damn, that's a badass band. You know, how'd he find these guys? You know, we thought he was good, you know.
It's all in house.
All of it's him, you know. So it blown us away even more then, you know, that we thought just Prince. This is Prince by himself, dude. So, yeah.
I saw an interview, and Don, I know you got questions. I saw an interview with him when he was a very, very young man, like 13, and he was talking about something that was happening politically. But as a young man, was he the same as he was as an older man? Did he kind of always have that kind of character?
He always had, you know, it's funny online they talk about the side eye, you know, which he did, you know. He was always mischievous, bro.
That was his nature, bro.
So he was always, you know, cracking jokes and side eye and being an irritant, you know. And I can see this up close to personal because that would come out. He was the shortest guy on the basketball court, and he'd light your ass up. You couldn't catch him. You couldn't catch him. You've seen the various stories over the years about him playing basketball and heels and all that shit. When he was a little dude, man, he was on the basketball team, but he was so short, you know, he didn't play that much. But he had skills, trust me, you know, and he loved basketball. So.
Wow. You know, you would think that, oh, you're just being arrogant. You weren't that good. And he really was. Like, how could you be
really
good
was.
At all these things?
He really was.
All
yeah.
these things you're good at. That's really amazing.
Yeah, he was good at it, man. It was amazing. Wow. I mean, God blessed him in a number of ways, man. No question about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Don?
No, I have so many questions that I don't want to be too early as far as talk about this album or this album here, because I know we're talking about the early stages, but I got to ask this, being a part, I'm assuming you were a part of Flight Time in the beginning, right?
From day one.
Morris was actually a drummer, and Alexander O'Neill was the lead singer. How did that come about to where you were the man behind the, you know, behind the sticks, and then Morris became the lead singer? Can you briefly talk a little bit about that transition?
That's another one of them long stories. I'll try to make the short version. okay, so Morris and Prince got tight. I guess anybody that's seen the Unsung and saw the our cartoon online and stuff, you can see how they got tight. Yeah, and so when Prince made it, you know, I was always under the assumption because, remember, he joined Prince's childhood band, Grand Central. Morris joined later because Prince's cousin was the drummer in the beginning. And Morris replaced him because Morris could play, you know, better and all that, you know. And so anyway, So how this came about after Prince made it and stuff, you know, he Morris freaked out because Morris had moved to Maryland with his mom and his brother and stuff. And he heard him on the radio and tripped out and immediately came back home and got tight with him because, you know, he had been in the band with him and stuff. And that's how that friendship, you know, evolved even more. And so they, you know, Prince had a little studio in his house or whatever. That's how they started cutting stuff. But anyway, that first year that he went out on tour, you know, he took Morris, you know, out, but he didn't play the drums, you know, because, and that was puzzling to me because I was like, you know, I kind of teased him. I said, dude, how come you're not a drummer? He said, I already got a drummer. You know, Bobby Z was drummer. Chris wanted his band to be even white and black back then. He's had the foresight to spin that he wanted his band to be mixed. So anyway, I was teased. I said, Morris, how's you not, you know, being a drummer? Anyway, he took Morris out that first year, on his first record when he went touring. He took Morris out, but he made Morris tape the show. That was Morris's job. He was hanging out, and he was filming him and stuff. So then when he got back, you know, he made the song, him, you know, from him and Morris being living together and hanging out and stuff, you know, they would, you know, Morris would mess around on the keyboard or whatever. So anyway, he was messing with a groove, and it would turn out to be Party Up. And remember, Prince took that, and he made a deal with him. He said, okay, I like that groove. I can do two things. I say, I can give you money for it, or I can get you a record deal and a band. And he asked Morris, which one do you want to do? Now think about this. Now, Morris is, you know, young. He could either say, yeah, well, give me, you know, X amount of dollars and let it go like that. Now, he said, no, I'll take the band.
That's smart.
So anyway, so when he came back, when they came back from off a tour, he told Morris, go get flight time. Because we had been rival bands. So go get the guys on flight time. And so Morris approached us. Now, by this time, this was probably the best version of Flight Time locally that we had because we had Alexander O'Neill as our lead singer by this time. And Jimmy Jam had joined and Monty. And me and Terry were in there, you know, and we had various badass white boy guitar players and stuff. So we was rolling around here in the city, but we were still spinning our wheels and stuff, you know, because we were trying to get a deal. We were trying to make it just like everybody else. So anyway, he told him, Morris, to go get them. Now, the only problem, y'all, is that Morris plays the drums, too. And so I'm the drummer, and Morris the drummer. Now, the little side story to me and Morris grew up, you know, as friends. We used to play drums in his mom's living room at 11, 12 years old, side by side.
Wow.
We were the tie. Yeah, awesome. We were both left-handed. Now, Morris is all the way left-handed. He's seriously left-handed. I'm right-handed, you know, I'm a right-handed person, but I play drums lefty, you know, and I got always called myself
a left-handed.
Yeah. So I'm just messed up like that. But that's, you know, we used to do that. We used to play. This is why me, him, and Prince play the drums alike. So anyway, that's the thing. So Morris felt bad, like, you know, Prince told him to go get the band and stuff. But Morris knew he was going to play the drums. Morris did not want to be the lead singer. He wanted to play the drums. But the problem with that is that I was the drummer. And so anyway, they had the famous Wheaton. And I'm sure if y'all go online, you can see about the famous beat they had with Alex. You know, they called it a beating with Flight Time, and it was Terry, Jimmy, Monty, and Alex, and they met Morris and Prince out there at a Perkins out there on Highway 12 and stuff to talk about, you know, Prince wanted to do this record deal, you know, and wanted to form this band. And so Morris felt bad. So Morris, I don't know if you guys remember, you guys are old school. There was a band back then that they were Morris's cousins. People don't know that. It was a band called Champagne, and they had a hit called How About Us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
Morris,
and that was Morris's cousin. And so Morris felt bad for Bean. Well, you know, that was a little side note between him. People don't really know this. He said, Bean, you know, if, you know, I know that, you know, Prince wants to do this, I want to play drums, but you say, you know, if you get that, I probably can get you in their band ever. So anyway, I was disappointed, but I went my ass home and just kept practicing. You know, I wasn't worried about it. And so anyway, they went out there and they had the meeting. And in the meeting, Alexander Neal stood up and told Prince, you know, hey, dude, I need a house. I need money. I need this. I need that. I need some paper and all that. So, anybody that knows Prince, that wasn't going to fly with him. So after that, the meeting was over. Yeah. Terry and Jimmy and all of them are sitting there stunned. You know, Morris and all them guys are stunned. And Jimmy and Monty. And the meeting was over. So after the meeting, Morris called Morris and told him, say, you go back. You get Jelly Bean. And you're going to sing. You're going to be the lead. And Morris said, dude, I don't want to sing. I don't know what to do. He said, I'll teach you. You know, you got to do is be cool, you know, put your hand in your pocket, walk around, and let these guys play. And that's how we started.
Wow.
Time was born. Yeah.
Amazing.
Wow,
story.
You learn something. You learn something new every day. I didn't know Morris and Polly Carmen were cousins.
Yeah. His cousins were in Champagne. Yeah.
Amazing.
How about us?
Wow.
Jelly Bean Johnson was supposed to be their drummer. I don't even know it.
All right. So I just want everyone to know that, you know, if you just tuned in, we're speaking with Jelly Bean Johnson from The Time, and now he is an indie artist as well as still in The Time. And I like that. I like the fact that, you know, you do your own solo thing, but you don't leave your group. And I really don't like when people do that. You know, it's
tired, baby. The struggle's real because, you know, and you know, y'all know our peers. There's tons of us like that, you know, you guys leave their groups all the time, man. You know, that happens because it always comes, and we could talk about the elephant in the room. It always comes down to money, and that happens, you know. When you're not feeling, you getting your fear, whatever, that's what happens.
Right.
And so you split off. And we've seen some iconic band members leave, man. And, I mean, even today, you got 2 and 3/3 versions of iconic bands, man. And it's sad,
absolutely.
But it's reality.
The struggle is real.
Man, I got to ask this quick question. I got to ask you a quick question.
Go ahead.
You're talking about – just quick question. And again, you don't have to – you know, I don't want to get all into the business of it or whatever, but I heard the rumors of course, when Prince joined the band, actually it was Andre Simone's band. And I guess when Prince went on and did his thing with Revolution, whatever – Andre joined him, and then he ended up leaving. And you heard about the rumors that they got in a fight. Are those rumors?
It's true. Hey, bro, it's a lot of people don't know. It's a lot of stuff behind the scenes.
A lot of inside
stuff.
But you know what? I love the fact.
It's amazing.
It is. I mean, because everything that was coming out of Minnesota at that time, I'm a generation. What is it? Is it where there was a Generation X? I'm a 74 baby. I was born in 74.
Oh, yeah.
And so growing up, you know, in the 80s, it was all about Minneapolis up to, you know, from you guys to Mint Condition, you know. So,
You
know,
I did Mint Condition 91.
See?
All right. So, but Don, you were going somewhere. Did you have a question with that, or are you done?
It was just, you know, I was just asking, you know, whether rumor is true, you know, when you hear about, you know, the Andre Simone and Prince issue and everything, and one of the reasons why he left, because, you know, that was his group when he, you know.
I another little side note to that. Prince moved in to Andre. He got kicked out. His dad kicked him out the house, and he moved in with Andre Simone. So that was a lot of, you know, and Andre Simone's mom, you know, nurtured him. She was like his mother, you know, and that's where the Grand Central Band, that's where they rehearsed everything in Andre's basement, you know. That's where they all was, you know. So that's why him and Andre were really, really tight. And then Andre did that first year, and Andre left because once again,
I just said
to you guys earlier, you just once again, it happens, you know.
Yep.
And that's when you got Brown Mark to play. Brown Mark was 19 years old when he joined Revolution.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, as time went on, you're in the Time now, and you guys did this Purple Rain movie thing came up. How? I mean, that was so big. That was so gigantic. How was that for you going from being
cultural
on radio? And then all of a sudden you're in the movie theaters, you're all over the TV. You guys are everywhere. How did that impact you? I mean, how did that feel?
Well, it was life changing because I can guarantee you, as we was doing the 1999 tour, that's all Prince was talking about. We're gonna do this movie. We're gonna make this. You know, we're gonna be big stars. He was telling us that. But at the same time, we wasn't really making that much money. That was the other elephant in the room. We were touring and we were seeing the country and we were killing audiences every night. And the Time was whooping his ass every night, which he didn't like. But, you know, it was, you know, that was the only satisfaction we were giving y'all because we wasn't really making any money, you know. So that was the thing. But he was saying, he had the foresight that, you know, we're going to make this movie and we're going to be these huge stars and everything. But, you know, when you're a young black kid and you're seeing all this money being made and you're not really getting that much of it, you know, it affects you. I'm not going to say it.
Right.
Especially when you get up the pump like that, you know, every day.
Right, right.
So
you don't understand the business part of it.
Yeah. You don't, you know. All you know is you're seeing is millions of dollars being made, you know, and it's funny. You know, I was really bitter back then, but then I seen all the iconic bands that went through this New Edition. You know, them boys were exploited like that. You know, a lot of iconic bands that were exploited, man, like that.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, it's hard to deal with that when you coming up and you seeing all this money made and you get your check and it's $150 a week or whatever, or $200 whatever.
Right.
You're like, what? Something ain't quite right here.
And you're
in front of 15,000-20,000 people a night.
Right.
Like we
something's very, very
and
wrong.
We know, and by this time, and you got to realize, we're getting more and more arrogant too, because we're killing every night, and we're like,
we're
killing, but
and the money's
the
not
only
coming
one that's
with...
really benefiting from this is Morris. Yeah, so that was the thing, bro.
Wow. So anyway, the movie thing did come, and you guys were
the movie thing did come. Yeah, and I never forget Wendy and Lisa been online talking about how funny it was to see me, because he put us in acting lessons and all that stuff, you know, and they was laughing at Jelly Bean, 6'4", Jelly Bean pirouetting across the floor at dancing class or acting class and all that stuff.
You gotta talk about the deleted scenes where you're fighting Prince.
And we had all that bullshit there. But see, the other elephant was in the room too is fire Terry Jimmy right after that, you know, right after 9/8, you know. And so I had to check myself too, because, you know, I was bitter, man, because he fired them too after we had, you know, we had spent 2 years building this up and building the foundation for him to be able to even do this. And then he fires them, don't ask, don't have no meeting, no nothing, you know, he just did it. So.
Yeah,
so
kind of like a Barry Gordy thing.
Yeah. It was heartbreaking, but we had, you know, I had to deal with it. And me and Monty, you know, at least four of us was gone, because Terry and Jimmy and me and Monty quit. And the only reason I went back is because I was having my first child. And it wasn't like I was going to go get a job real quick.
Right.
You know, have money, you know.
Right.
And wasn't nobody going to hire this, you know, this little rock star drummer from the time. They wasn't going to hire him at Walmart or whatever Kmart or whatever was working at that time, you know. They didn't give a shit about that. Plus, it wouldn't have been enough money to really take care of myself in the first place. So I went back, you know, and he brought me back in open arms, because, you know, he needs at least some of us. You know? And that by this point, he still had me and Jesse Johnson, you know, so he could build around that. So.
Cool.
And that's, you know, and that's when you saw the second inversions of the time, and you know, the revolution changed up a little bit more, too, and all that stuff. So, yeah.
Go ahead. So now, as time went on, now we know Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis is gone. Actually, they came out. They were with us, right?
Yeah.
They came out.
Yeah, they came out. Remember they did Climax and
yeah,
you know,
they
first
they did
was
Dynasty.
Just,
they did
Dynasty.
Dynasty.
They did the Climax, the Dynasty, and then they hit with the SOS band. That's when they hit and got the SOS band is the one that got them fired, because you know, we were in concert in San Antonio. And they were in Atlanta doing the SOS band. Yeah, in a snowstorm. And, you know, back in the days, you could get an inch of snow, and it would shut the airport down south.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you a little side thing. This is when I was tight with them, too, hanging with them a lot. And I could have very easily been there with them. But I chose not to go, you know.
I chose not to go.
And they got caught, man. And
that's
history. Y'all know the history.
Right. So then, you know, but they went on and they continued their success through writing and producing for people. And so now I'm leading into you, mister, because you had just had a baby or having a baby. And
I just had my first kid.
Right. And so go ahead.
So then I had to, and then let me tell you what, then I had to adjust, because now he's bringing in all these new members in the time. The only one there is me and Jesse. Jesse Johnson basically took over.
Okay.
He basically became the leader of the time, you know, because Morris had kind of checked out, you know, because him and Morris was, you know, they were battling because Morris didn't like the way he had just torn his band apart. So that's when Morris had all the issues he started having, because, you know, he was there, but he wasn't there.
Right.
And then, you know, once again, the money is that big elephant in the room, too, and Prince was nickel and diming us about, you know, to pay for this movie. But it was what it was, you know. So another side note too is Vanity left too. Remember, Vanity was supposed to, it wasn't supposed to be Apollonia 6, it was supposed to be Vanity 6. Remember that? And she left too because of money.
Wow.
So so then we so we rehearsed and we getting it together, and it was just amazing to see all this. You know, we went in rehearsals, we had to get all these new guys up to set, and this is when you get to St. Paul Peterson and people like that, the Jerry Hubbards and stuff that ended up in the time. Now, St. Paul was 18 years old. You know, he's 17, 18 years old when he joined. And we had me and Jesse, you know, Jesse was riding him, you know, but Jesse would ride him, and then I would be the buffer and tell him it's going to be all right, you know.
Okay.
So, you know, Jesse Johnson was using his inner press, to get on these guys and you know, beat them down and stuff to get them up to stuff, because let's face it, they was replacing iconic members of the time in this band, you know.
Wow.
So that was the thing and stuff. So
okay.
We got that together, and we was, you know, we started doing the movie, man. And I remember it was a lot of 5 a.m. record, you know, wake-up calls and stuff, and being on the set, all that kind of stuff. It was brutal, but
yes,
we got it done, and I guess the rest is history, man.
Wow.
When it came out.
Amen. Amen. Yeah. All right, I want to get to you. I want to get to so, you know, and I know, okay, so now you have a child and life is going on. And when did you start writing and producing? Because
it was a side story about that too, man. After we got Purple Rain going and everything, it was going and stuff. And like I said, go back to a little side story. Morris disappeared, you know. So this is why you don't see the time out. That's when the time wasn't a part of the Purple Rain tour. But Morris disappeared, you know. I never forget, you know, Prince used that. We played a show at First Avenue, which Prince ended up using the music for the Bird and Jungle Love. Those were used in Purple Rain. He recorded them from that particular show, and those are the ones that you see in the movie, those recorded versions. But anyway, right, we did that show, and I never forget, Morris walked out the back door after we did that show, the revamped time, he walked out the back door, bruh. And I can tell you and Don, I didn't see him for the next 5 years.
Whoa.
He walked out.
Oh,
yeah,
you didn't contribute to the Color of Success album?
No. That's Ricky. Your friend Ricky Smith? Yeah, that's Ricky's on that album. I did not have nothing to do with it. And, you know, I didn't see Morris. I'm going to tell y'all when I saw Morris. I didn't see Morris until like 5 years later. And, you know, and I was at the premiere of, you know, Purple Rain and all that shit, but I didn't see him because, you know, he was a big star by then. So I didn't catch up with him. I didn't run into him or anything. But anyway, I didn't see him until 5 years later when I was at production. I was working as a producer at Flight Time, and we did Fish Net.
That's
how I saw Morris after that. Yeah.
That's how that happened. Okay.
That's how that happened, man. And then you know, we got the band started falling apart and everything. And y'all remember, I became a part of a band after Morris left, and then Jesse left shortly after that. Prince wanted to do another band, so we did The Family. And that's how The Family came about, because, you know, St. Paul was 18 years old. Susanna, he was engaged to. So, you know, so he said he wanted to do a band. He wanted to do a new band. Jesse wasn't about to be, because he wanted to keep the time going, but Jesse wanted to be the lead singer, and he didn't want to do that. He wanted to make Paul the lead singer of the time. And let's face it, anybody that knows Jesse Johnson, that wasn't going down like that. So Jesse left. So now the time is basically disbanded, you know, because Morris is gone, Jesse gone. And so he said, well, we're going to do a new band. And we're going to make Paul the front singer and Susanna, who he's engaged to, and Bean, you're going to play the drums. And that's when we recorded the Family album, man. And so we did that. And we did that. We rehearsed for 9 months. Once again, the first playbook. We rehearsed for 9 months, all that shit and everything, thinking that the Family was going to open for him during the Purple Rain tour. You know, it turned out ended up being Sheila E., but we thought it was going to be us because Paul, you know, and you guys know how the business go. Paul, we did the album and Screams of Passion ran to the top 10. And Prince didn't have any papers on him. He hadn't signed him to any kind of contract.
Oh.
And so you're an 18-year-old white boy out here in the universe out here, and you know all the y'all know how the record companies, y'all come up from that era, all the record companies seen this white boy that and Prince, we hot and everything. And so they start throwing money at Paul. And he bit.
That's the way it goes.
He bit. So, and that's, you know, and so now Paul's gone. Prince is mad as hell. Prince is mad as hell. And I never, a little side note, I never forget. He called me from France. Remember, this is when he's doing Under Cherry Moon, whatever. He called me from France. He said, Bean, I want you to join the Revolution playing the drums. I guess he was going to have me playing double drums with Bobby, whatever shit. And I said to him, I said, Prince, but what about the family? He hung up the phone. And
wow.
That was that. He just hung up on me. And, you know, and then the next week, a week and a half later, my check was cut, like, virtually in half. So,
wow.
So once again, here I
Here we go again. Wow.
I'm in this
man.
Situation
again. Yeah,
and
it's so,
so
much.
By this time, Terry, Jimmy, and Roland, and they see what happened, because it basically happened to them, and they say, well, Bing, you know, you can come over here and work as a producer. You know, we'll give you just they gave me just enough where I could pay my, you know, because trust me, Prince just gave me money to get my house, and now I couldn't pay for it. I couldn't afford it. So I had to, you know, I'd do something.
Yeah.
So them guys
gave me
a job there producing at flight time and for a minimum salary. And at least I was able to pay my mortgage and I could keep my house that Prince had gave me a down payment on.
Amen.
And this is when I started being, what the hell, you want to know when I started writing songs? Then. Mm.
That's
the
when you started.
First one I did was I don't know if you guys remember. It was a song I had a hit on, Nona Hendrix, Why Should I Cry?
Love it.
First thing for flight time, and I got lucky enough that hit, and that helped pay the bill for. And that started like a 5-year thing there with them, you know, with them producing and stuff for them. I did Criticize.
You guys, I just want you to know, you guys stole our engineer. Steve Hodge, right?
The sound of solo. He was violent.
I know, man.
Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis are ruthless too. There's a reason they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They're ruthless too, like them.
I was like,
y'all gotta realize I've been both camps. I've seen it up close and personal, y'all.
And you know what? And Steve's like, I gotta do what I gotta do.
Yeah.
He was gone, man. He got
He's a big part of Terry and Jimmy. Trust it. His sound, he was a big and I saw that up close and personal too. I saw that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you gotta have somebody like that you trust. You know, and he was the guy that you could trust.
Man, I'm telling you, and he mixed most of my hit songs too. He did. He mixed them. When I did Mint Condition, he brought Dave Rideau in, but Steve did the bulk of that stuff, man. He was immaculate with that stuff.
Bad boy. Okay, listen, I have a question from overseas, and then I want to get to the song that you did for Janet. The question from overseas is, can you talk about the complexity of the song 777?
Okay, that's
that drum riff. Everybody talks about that drum riff at the beginning.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing, man, and it's been the elephant in the room over the years about that, man. And I never forget, you know, Prince brought, you know, he brought the song to us, man, and I hear this crazy ass drum beat and shit, you know, and turn out, you know, but then we thought it was David Garibaldi from Tower of Power. Now, a little side note is David Garibaldi is me, Morris, and Prince's favorite drummers to this day. And Morris can play the most like David, you know. I told David this. I've had this discussion with him. Morris plays the most like him, you know.
Wow.
And people don't even know it, yeah. But, you know, I just dabbled with him and stuff. But I always idolized him because, you know, I was into the rock drummers, too. I was into Tommy Aldridge and all that shit. But me, you know, me, Prince, and Morris idolized him coming up. So anyway, the Lynn drum machine back then had this crazy-ass beat on it, the 777 beat. And Prince found that beat and made a song. He made 777 out of it, you know. So people, you know, was tripping like, damn, you know. They thought, you know, and he put my name on it and everything. But, you know, and I never forget, we were getting ready to go on tour. And me, him, and Morris came down to the Armory. We were rehearsing downtown at the Armory. And we was figuring, we sat down and drummers, and he's like, how in the hell is Jelly Bean going to play this in concert? You know, because it had blown all everybody. How in the hell is Jelly Bean going to play this in concert and have his boys be able to dance to this shit and all that? So we sat down in this empty-ass arena and stuff, me, him, and me, Prince, and Morris, and we each took a turn at it, how I should play it. So Prince sat down first. He played the shit, you know, and it was close. It was funky. And Morris tried his hand at it. It was funky. And then I sat down, and they both stood there and watched me set, you know. And so we just kept hitting at it until I finally figured out how to play it, where I could play it enough in concert where we could play it and you know. And you remember, it ran to damn near number one. The only thing that kept us out of number one was Evan the Champagne King, Love Come Down. Was the only, you know, that song just ran. It ran to number one, man. But, yeah, that's, you know, and it's been, you know, speculated over the years. They said it was David Garibaldi. Then I had the president from one of the guys that worked at Lindrum company. They said, no, it was another guy here that did it. So I never – David, I never really asked him per se about it. He's cool as hell. But he never really took credit for it either. But, you know, that's – it was always for years I thought it was him because, you know, you listen to him play and you could see him programming, something like that, you know. So, but, yeah, that's a rumor. Yeah, yeah.
There's a rumor that did you guys, let me ask you, and I got to tell from the horse's mouth, is there a rumor that you guys played that song live on American Bandstand? Is that true?
Yeah. Well, we didn't play it live. Oh. It was to the record.
Okay.
Hey, you got to realize, we were good at faking shit back then.
Okay.
We have been taught quite well by Prince how to fake shit. So yeah, that performance is famous because they think we're playing it, but it's the record, you know. And back then, when you went on TV shows, you played to your record. You didn't really play live.
Yeah,
sometimes, you know, Soul Train, you could play live, but Dick Clark wasn't having it, you know.
you
go play
wild.
To your record on that board, yeah. But it looked like we were playing it, and that's because we, like I said, me, Morris, and Prince had figured out how I could play it in concert. And then there's a bunch of us. Bunch of videos on, you know, of us playing in the concert where it's rolling. I was like, damn, I guess I was playing it pretty good. So it worked in concert, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, all right, so listen, I want to get to how did this thing now with Janet, how did this come up with Black Cat and you writing a song for Janet?
Okay, this is another elephant in the room. Rhythm Nation was done. You know, it was pretty much done. And I'm sure to this day, you'd have to ask Terry and Jimmy about it, you know. But I'm sure she approached them first, you know, because Rhythm Nation done, and they already had been fighting with the powers that be about, you know, her records and what was finished and whatnot. And, you know, record execs would get on you if they still thought they send your ass back to the drawing board if they didn't like what you had. So anyway, we got to the end of it. And Janet had one more song. I know she, you know, if she got with her fiance at the time, Renee or whatever, and they had this song, you know, and she brought it to me, bro, and y'all ain't gonna believe this. It was on a cassette. It was on a little cassette, man, and it was a piano riff. It wasn't even a damn, the Black Cat riff was a piano riff. And she approached Terry and Jimmy, and they probably, you know, I know them, they're like, you know, it's the record's done. Just give it to Bean, see what he could do, you know, because they would do that, you know.
Right.
She brought it to me. Yeah, she brought it to me, and I heard it, and I was like, damn. And mind you, a little side note for me is I was into all the heavy metal bands back then, too. I was into the Van Halen and Dawkins and Rat and all these, you know, super, you know, you know, metal hard rock band, Motley Crue and all these, Kiss. I was into them. I mean, I went to see Kiss in 1976. I was the only black person at that book. So, so anyway.
And tall.
So she brought it. She brought it to me, and I was like, damn, I was, like, intrigued with it. So, anyway, you know, I got a lot of friends locally in the music that still do. You know, I got a ton of mentored so many badass young musicians around here. So, anyway, there's this guy, his name is David Berry, who ended up being her guitar player for over 10 years. He was playing a band out on the Strip. And so I went on the Strip, and I approached him. Now, mind you, I'm playing guitar by then. But I'm in producer mode then, Wardell. I'm not, you know, I'm not tripping about trying to play everything and all this shit. And I wanted this to be, you know, authentic. And I just felt to do it justice, I wanted to get a guitar player. I don't play with a pick, you know. So I wanted to get somebody, you know, and preferably a white boy with a rock background to, you know, to play these riffs for me. And David turned out to be the perfect guy. So I said, man, I want you to come by the studio. And And I got this idea for Janet Jackson. All I had to say was Janet Jackson. And he's like, oh, shit. So he comes there. And I get him to the studio. Me and John McClain. Everybody know the famous John McClain.
I know John.
John's a world-class guitar player, too. But anyway, we rent a Marshall. And back then, I don't know if Ricky knows about this. I had already done a bunch of guitar solos through the Rock Man. Remember, it was like a little thing that you could plug in and give you all these cool-ass rock sounds. It was like a little Walkman-type device and shit. So anyway, so we get to the studio, and I played a riff for him on off the piano, and I said, man, I need you to play this through this Marshall, man. He said, being cool, whatever. So we cut one pass through the Rock Man, the rock set it on the Rock Man, and then we cut another section through the Marshall, and that's what makes Black Cat, that riff, sound bigger than life, you know. And I programmed the Lynn drum machine, got Terry play bass. I think Jimmy might have played, it's a very sparse keyboard thing, but done that. And all of a sudden, we had this big, huge rock song. And then I met with Janet, and I told her, I said, you know, baby, I just want you to sound like a rock and roll queen. I said, your brother's got Beat It. So your brother's got Dirty Diana. I said, you should have your own one. Because mind you now, Brad, Dad is huge now, you know, by this point, because Control's been out and all that shit.
Right.
I did guitar solos on
Rhythm Nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're doing Rhythm Nation. It's the last song, Rhythm Nation. Control had already did what it did. So I told her, you know, I said, I want you to sound like a rock and roll queen on it. She said, Bean, I got you. And so anyway, so we start cutting the vocals. We kick everybody at flight time because, you know, black folks got our version to loud rock guitar. So you can't. you got to clear the studio, man. Terry and Jimmy had to take their ass out, too, man. It's going to be loud and crazy. Everybody got to go. Even the girl I was engaged to at that. She had to go, too. She was mad as hell.
Wow.
Yeah, we kicked everybody out because I tried a few passes with her sitting there and Janice fiance sitting there, and I give him credit. He eased up to that time. He said, dude, he said, you're not going to get none of what you need out of Janet until you kick your girlfriend out of here. He said, I'm going to leave too. And I told her, I said, babe, you got to go home. So that. And it was like clockwork. The minute she left and Renee, Janet's boyfriend left, me and Janet, it clicked. And she sung it like 2-3 passes down, man. And I told her the parts I wanted her to sound, you know, put a little grit on. And, you know, Janet has a little light, fluffy voice, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
yeah.
I wanted to make her, you know, I like double, triple, quad that voice and all the different complex harmonies we put in there. And that was Black Cat. And Terry and Jimmy were blown away when they heard the shit. They was like, oh, my God, yeah.
Wow.
And that's how Black Cat came about, man. Yeah. And just, you know, a little side note for me, it was disheartening to see, you know, she just did this thing about, because, you know, it's all the speculation and stuff, and I've never really, you know, gotten after about this shit about who did what or whoever and stuff, you know. But she took 100% credit from it. But, you know, people that know in the know, and especially my musician friends, know I'm the reason that way it sounds like that and why it's that song it is to this day. Anybody that knows my background knows, you know. But,
excellent.
You know, she gets 100% credit for it. And she didn't even do a section of her documentary about it. You know, she did sections on everything, her Michael and her and Terry Jimmy, everybody. But she didn't do one about that, you know. So, whatever.
Whatever.
But that's what it's I guess, yeah.
Yeah, you can put it in yours. So, but anyway, let's just take a small music break and take a listen to the song.
Okay.
And then we'll be right back to close it out. We do have one more question from overseas that I want to just get to you, and then we'll close it out when we come back, okay?
Okay, all right.
All right, guys. So, man, Jelly Bean Johnson, what a blessing you are.
I'm enjoying
man.
This. I am enjoying this.
It's beautiful. I mean, and he's full of information, man. So we're grateful that he's able to just drop it on us like this. All right, guys. We'll be right back right after this. Wow. Let me bring Tony's mics on. That's funky, dude. That is funky. That's what we're talking about right there. And man, oh man, we love it, dude. Thank you so much. I have a couple things happening here.
Go ahead. You know, I got to say this because you talk about, you know, everyone, you know, have, you know, these rock elements that we have in our music, but, you know, technically we created rock and roll. Let's keep it real.
Yeah.
So we never really.
I'm tired of getting in fights about that, bro. You
know,
I'm glad you said that because that's, you know, my love for Hendrix, man, is just profound. But, you know, it just goes way back, man. Chuck Berry, these, you know, Fats Domino.
Exactly.
Little Richard, all these guys, you know, so.
People like to frown. They try to frown their faces and say, they don't deserve to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and all of that stuff. And I'm like,
I stopped arguing about it, bro, because you know what? You can't win that argument. I've learned. Yeah. Like, you find my arguments, you just can't win. You know, so.
All right, listen, I have a guess.
I know in my soul how I feel, so, yeah.
I have a guest on the line. I'm going to bring this listener. Hey, who do we have in area code 203?
This is Jay David, Jelly Bean.
Hey, how you doing, Jay? Oh, how you doing, man?
My brother, it's been a long time since we talked.
Yeah, it is. It's great to hear from you today.
Same here, brother. I'm enjoying the show. And Bean, you know that I've been with you for 40 years. You know it. Being wrong.
Yeah, you have. We broke bread together. We shared drinks together. Yeah, you have.
Right, and it's always a great time. And I just wanted to tell everybody out there listening, you know, what a genuine brother that you have been to me and Robin over these past 20 years since we first met you back in 2001. You've always shown us love. You know, you've always been real down to earth. We enjoy hanging out with you, and I'm just giving you my respect, props, and love, my brother.
Hey, right back at you. Give you a lovely wife my love too, man.
I sure will. We are looking forward to seeing you in Brooklyn next month. So we're going to come out.
Wow!
Yeah, I'm going to be out the East Coast. I love that, man. It's always a journey when I come out the East Coast, man. I see a lot of people I haven't seen. You know, so it's great.
And Bean, if I can just ask one question.
Because
you know that I've been all over Renaissance. I'm all over Get Experienced. You know, Bean, can you just talk a little bit about your songwriting style and like where you get your influences from?
Well, for me, you know, and I think I've told Wardell this and Don Gale this, you know, I just have a affinitive love for guitar, man. You know, the drums pay the bills, but, you know, guitar, you know, I always have this saying I tell around this country and stuff that the drums are physical and violent for me, and the guitar is spiritual and emotional. And that's where my writing comes from, you know.
Mm.
It's from, you know, guitar growing up, you know, loving Jimi Hendrix. Loving the rock bands and stuff, you know. I never forget a life-changing experience for me is what I did the solo from. I used to hang out with Prince a lot, you know. I don't know if my other peers, the Jimmy Jams and Morris, Terry, and all them, didn't realize that. I used to hang out a lot at Prince. I used to jam in the 90s with Prince a lot at Paisley and hang out there. So anyway, if y'all remember, Miles Davis used to hang out there with Prince too.
Sure.
And Prince introduced me to Miles Davis. And so I'm standing there, and I'm out there at a party one night, and Miles Davis came up to it. But this time, I don't know if you guys remember a guy named Foley. He's bad as hell. He played the bass, piccolo bass, and he played Pete drums and B-punk for years.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he's a great friend of mine, and he introduced me to Miles because he was playing with Miles during the time. And Miles told him, you know, yeah, this is the guy you were talking about that played the guitar solo on Innocent. You know, remember the song Innocent? Yeah, Alexander O'Neill. And Miles told me that, man, I really like what you played on Innocent, the guitar solo you played on Innocent. And now, Warder, you got to realize, I idolize. I love Miles Davis. That was my jazz side with him.
Yeah.
And for him to say that was life-changing for me, that he actually liked something that I played. Now, think about all the badass guitar players he had, the Schofields, the Mike Stearns, and all them guys. And he actually liked, but remember, he loved Hendrix, you know.
Mm.
And there's Hendrix influences on this. If you listen to Innocent, there's my, you know, that's the Hendrix influence on my solo, you know. So that's the thing for me. Your guitar is it influenced everything I write so far. You know, I wrote some songs in piano, and God, you know, God only gives you so many gifts. I wish he had gave me more gifts on the piano. Even though I played some keyboards on some of my productions, I always had to get Jimmy or Armani or somebody to play, you know, or various keyboard players to play what I heard in my head and stuff. So,
right.
Yeah, that's my songwriting is based on my guitar playing.
Wow.
That's great. Well, Jelly Bean, I sure do appreciate it. It's great talking to you. Wardell, great talking to you, too. You guys keep on keeping on.
All right, brother. Thanks for calling
in.
Safe,
brother.
Appreciate
I'll see you. Be safe.
You guys take care. I'll see you next month, Bean.
All right. All right. Looking forward to it. Yeah.
All right. So, okay, so this is the last question, and it's coming from overseas. It says, how did it come about to combine the Chicago horns with the Minneapolis funk and put some jelly on it? And how did that change your original idea for the song?
Okay. Put Some Jelly On It was written by a great friend of mine. And I don't know if you remember earlier in the show with y'all, I was talking about the Chicago blues and how much it influenced me. I did three blues records on an artist named Ronnie Baker Brooks. He is the son of blues great Lonnie Brooks. Him and his brother are both Chicago blues, you know, badasses in Chicago to this day, and they came from the dad. They were Brooks family tree. Anyway, I did Ronnie's first three records, and a lot of that Chicago blues stuff. Now, I already had it in my DNA from my mother, because, you know, remember I told you at the beginning of the show, I grew up listening to soul and Chicago blues and stuff as a shorty. And so that's where my love for the blues came in. I think my mom, I could ask her. I remember her saying that she used to date Otis Rush. And I don't know if you remember who Otis Rush is. He's a blues great, too. But anyway, that's where my love for Chicago blues. But I did three blues records. You know, this is after I left Flight Time. You know, I did his first three records and stuff. So anyway, he wrote Put Some Jelly On It and stuff. And so we was listening to that and stuff, and we thought, damn, it'd be great to have a horn section in that. Well, it just so happened, Tom Washington, I don't know if you guys are familiar with him, he's the guy who used to do Earth, Wind & Fire's horns and all that. He's based in Chicago. And so I sent Ronnie some money and stuff, and Ronnie said, you know, Tom wants to put he loves this track, man. He wants to put horn arrangement on it. So we got Tom Washington to do the horns on him, which I was really blessed to have him do that, because like I said, he's been Earth, Wind & Fire and various other R&B acts back in the day. And that's who put it's like six horns on there. And that's that Chicago horns that fit perfectly with that funk groove that me and Ronnie come up with, you know, for Put Some Jelly On It. And with that, and then I put the crazy-ass guitar, which I'm known for, on there. So, yeah. So, yeah, that's how that came about. Yeah.
Awesome. That's awesome. All right, man. Well, you know, I kept you longer than I said I would, but thank you. It's been a pleasure and an honor. I want to give you, you know, the last say about, you know, if people wanted to follow you, first of all, how could they follow you and, you know, and support you and buy your records? How do they go about doing that?
Well, I'm starting a museum here in Minnesota. It's called the Minneapolis Style Museum. .com. You can go online and you can see the various things on there. All my records are on there. You can see that. My management is Jeff Luna. You can approach him on Facebook. I'm on all the different streams and stuff, Apple, Spotify, and all that kind of stuff. You can go on there. My handle on Facebook is, if you want to talk to me directly, it's Gary Johnson with 2 hours. And, you know, I put all my content on there, and there's various Jelly Bean Johnson pages on Instagram and Facebook, and that's how you can get a hold of my content and what's going on. I have a new single out called Renaissance we just did with some friends of West Coast friends of mine in the band. I've been using a few times in concert. They're called Official Biz, and they're really good. They're from out in L.A., and they have their own record out. And this how you can get a hold of Jelly Bean. It's the world of Jelly Bean. It's hard. The struggle's real out here to be a solo artist and then play, you know, in the time too. I still have my responsibilities in the time. And do that. Mm-hmm. That's what pays the bills. But I'm just trying to, you know, put some stuff out there, Wardell. You know how it is. Just put some stuff out there. You know, God gave me this gift, and I just want to share it before he called me home. You know, that's my whole thing. Yeah.
That's beautiful, man. Is there anything you want to say to your fans in closing?
Like I said, I want to, like I was saying, just I'm doing this museum and stuff. You know, I want, you know, the Minneapolis sound came from just, you know, came from a lot of us. It wasn't just Chris. And, you know, this museum is going to be about all the others that helped pave the way, you know. And so that's why I want to get something here. And I want to kind of put it on the north side. It's a bad area here, but that's where we all grew up at and nurtured our musical, you know, genius and musical success at. And that's where it all was born at. So I want to do it over there. And we're in the process, you know, in the process of raising money for that. And we're starting to do that. And at the same time, I want to, you know, stay funking, put singles out there for y'all until I have a record coming too. We're cutting, the process of cutting records for that, cutting singles for that. But I'm going to put a few singles out for that before it all comes out. And just be funky.
Okay.
Be safe out here. We're in a tough world right now, y'all.
Yeah,
a lot of horrible things going on, man. You know, it's hard.
Yeah,
you know, it's hard to be a parent right now. It's hard. You know, I got grandkids. I got kids. And there's some heartbreaking stuff going on. So, you know, be safe. Watch your back. A lot of craziness going on. It's a tough time in the world. But we're going to get through it. God got us.
Amen to that, brother.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, man. Go ahead, Don. Do you have anything you want to say?
No. I just wanted to kind of, you know, touch base on your museum. If anybody wants to, let's say, contribute or donate to the museum, I'm guessing they can kind of follow you on your social media platforms.
Yeah, my social media platform, you can go to www.MinneapolisSoundMuseum.com and go directly on there.
Okay.
We have a lot of content on there. You can donate. There's a lot of cool things you can buy on there for me in concert and T-shirts and all kind of stuff. My record, you can go on there and contribute to that. You know, it's going to take a while. You know, it takes a while to build anything. Anytime you're begging for money to help build something, it's going to take a little time, but... But that's the thing. You'll see me at the various arenas around the country with the time, God willing, you know, as long as we can do
it. I'm rooting
it,
for you,
know?
Brother. I'm rooting for
you. Yeah.
Hey, hold on.
Struggle's real, Don.
Most definitely, because when you guys...
Struggle's real.
When you guys come, every time you guys come to Little... I'm in Little Rock. I'm based in Little Rock, Arkansas, so every time the time is here,
man, I'm
there.
I'm in Springdale, Arkansas, Saturday, bro. I'll tell you, it's a small world. I'm in concert.
Wow, that's
there,
up
there.
That's up in Northwest. You know, that's up there by the university. So yeah, cool.
Yeah, I'm there on Sunday. Yeah.
All right. Well, God bless you, man, and thank you.
God bless both of y'all. God bless y'all. Thank you, Wardell. You know I love you. Thank you for having me, man.
Oh yeah, and you know we'll keep the legacy.
You know.
What?
I'm an old rock and roll. Everybody was buzzing my phone. Freeze was buzzing. You know you got to. You know Wardell's waiting on you. Where you at?
I told Jelly Bean, I said, you know, hey, man, you get this old, you can't be missing. People start to get
worried.
No, people start to worry. Exactly. I mean, we laugh about it, but it's true.
It's real. It's real talk, man.
For real.
I hear it all
the
time.
Mm-hmm. Man,
okay.
I'm
Jelly Bean. You're getting love from the UK. They said, but come visit them soon, man. They said, come visit the UK.
I played London a few times, man. Yeah, I played it there with F the Bucks. I played there with the Time. I love coming up there. I don't get over there enough, man. I really love to get over there more. I'd love to get over there with my solo stuff at some point, too.
I love playing
they
over
always,
there.
The Europeans have always shown me a lot of love, man, and I just want to continue
to
show them love back, and as long as they support me, you know, I'd love, they've always supported me. I just love going over there when I can. Yeah.
All right. Thanks for making that flyer too, Greg. He looks good in it. All right, guys. Well, God bless.
You two young men, take care of yourself. Be safe.
All right. You take
you
care.
You too, bro. I enjoyed it.
Hey, we're going to keep your legacy alive around here. Come back and see us.
Soon. All right. I appreciate it.
All
love
right,
y'all.
God bless. Later. Peace. Love you too,
bro.
God bless.
All right.
Jelly Bean. Much love, Jelly Bean Johnson, for coming on and blessing us in the time. God is beautiful, man. Thank you for sharing your story with us. We will keep your legacy alive, my brother here on Soul Eye Records Radio. Thanks to all the listeners. Thanks to the people that, you know, with questions and stuff. We appreciate that. Soul Eye Records Radio, we try to do it, man. We try to get all these interviews in here for you guys, these legendary artists that really, really share the stories behind the stories, right? I always love to get that, and I like to get those stories right from the mouth of the people that have been there. And so, guys, you know, thanks so much for supporting Soul Eye Records Radio. We'll continue to do our best to bring you the best interviews as long as we're here doing this. And so, guys, listen, we got about another 43 minutes left in the show, so we're going to just try to have a good time here. And I know I'm feeding back because I got my speakers up loud because the music is a bumping. Oh, man. Anyway, thank you so much again. So don't forget, it's an indie jazz show. We're, like Jelly Bean said, it's hump day. Everybody's kind of chilling. So we're going to, you know, we'll be getting to our jazz as well. But, you know, we had to do this. Jelly Bean, man, dude, bad boy, guitar and drums. Love it. All right, guys, let's keep it going on Soul Eye Records Radio. All right, y'all good? Y'all good? Hey, man, I just, you know, there's something more important than just playing another song. I just want to come in and say how much I really appreciate you guys as well. You always support us, and we appreciate that. And Soul Eye Records Radio is doing its best to continue to exist and to continue to bring good interviews to you guys. That's a blessing, right? It's a blessing to hear the stories from the people that were a part of the situation. And so we are so grateful that we could do that for you guys. So thank you again for your support. We appreciate everything that you guys do for us. Thank you to Greg for making those amazing flyers for us. We really appreciate him and all that he does. I also want to just give a shout out to Pablo, who is in the hospital. He's a DJ, and we care about him. He's from Dance Radio. You know, he does the same thing that we do. We just try to play good music for you. And so, Pablo, I want you to know that we are praying for you, brother. We know you're struggling right now and you're having a hard time, but keep up the good fight because we love you and we appreciate what you do. And it's a blessing that you bless us with your great music, man. So get better so you can come on and come back out here and do your thing again, all right? Just hang in there, man, but don't give up. You got to keep fighting, okay? And we'll be over here praying for you. We got you, and we're going to raise you up in the name of Jesus Christ, all right? So hang in there, Pablo. Hang in there, my brother. We love you here at Soul Eye Records Radio. Let's keep it going.
wall, I'm breaking in, 'cause I'm hungry like I've never been before. Yeah. Get out of my way, 'cause this hurricane is spreading far and wide. Yeah. Not much left to say, except that I will swim against this wicked tide. You can't stop me, I'm rising up, I'm the weight of my burden. I'm rising up like the sun in the sky. Falling line is breaking loose, destiny is mine to choose. I'm taking hold back in control.
I'm rising up,
yeah.
I'm rising up, I'm rising up.
look at you and wonder why would you even wanna stay? When all they do is lie to you, make you cry every other day. Whoa. How many times have you said I'll be damned before I take him back? Yeah. But then you take him back again.
Down on Solar Records Radio. Man, we got about another 25 minutes and 25 seconds left in the show. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. We appreciate you so much. Don't forget tomorrow is Throwback Thursday, where we celebrate all the great music that we grew up on. So come hang out with us as we go down memory lane together here on Solar Records Radio. Your boy Wardell Potts Jr., Don Fleming, and maybe Greg will call in. You never know. You got to see. You got to come hang out with us. Much love to our friends listening. Kimberly, what's happening, girl? Long time. I hope you're doing well. Eddie, how you doing, my brother? Thanks so much. We appreciate you. Larry Freeman out of the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia. What's up? What's up, Larry? Much love, man. What's up, Julian, out there in Detroit? What's up, girl? What's up, pretty girl? I hope you are doing well and all is good. Venetia in Cali. What's up, Venetia? My girl, my girl. Thank you guys so much. And Ron, What's up, Ron, out there in Rancho Cucamonga? I remember when I was a little boy, and my mom used to say, "Boy, I'm going to knock you to Cucamonga." I didn't know it existed. She was like, I was bad. I was a bad little boy. She says, "Boy, I'm going to knock you to Cucamonga." And now I remember living in, I ended up buying a house in Rancho Cucamonga. So she kind of did knock me there. Hey, so much love, Ron. I hope you're doing well, man. Long time, long time. I'm supposed to be coming to Cali in a few weeks, but I don't know, man, with these gas prices. Everything is just crazy right now. So I might have to chill on that. And then I have a lot of stuff going on over here with my vehicles, my tractor, getting a new gate up around my house. It's just a lot going on, man. So, but I'm trying to, I need to get there. I got to get there to see my grandbabies. I got to get out there and get some of that good food that they have in California. But anyway, much love to you guys, and I hope all is well. We're going to keep it rolling here on Solar Records Radio. It's Indie Jazz Day, and so that's exactly what we're doing, playing these indie artists and some nice jazz. So come on, Carlita Duran, do your thing, sweetheart, I guess, on Solar Records Radio. good music.
Thanks again.
again, Jellybean Johnson, for blessing us with his story, his time, and his amazing gifts. Thanks, you know, man, for coming on. We really appreciate you, man. And continue your success with the time and with your solo career. It's all good. And we will keep your legacy alive here on Solar Records Radio. We love you and appreciate you. All right, guys. So, Greg, thanks, my brother, for blessing us with your blessing, with your gifts. Thank you so much. We appreciate you, man. Love you much. All right, guys. And y'all all have a blessed and beautiful rest of your day. And don't forget, tomorrow, Throwback Thursday on Solar Records Radio. This is Wardell. I'm out.
My imagination. It can't be only me. No, I'm not going crazy. I feel you feeling me. You know. Do me right, baby.
way, down on my knees.